I'm Derek.
And I'm Noah, and you're listening to A Bite Of,
where we take our current favorite pop culture obsession and enjoy it one nibble at a time.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
New episode, new week, continuing our coverage of 1899.
This show. Ugh. How did I have 800 theories last time, and now I have 800 new theories this time?
I feel like I have less theories this time, but more confusion this time.
And that's exactly how they want it.
It's so much. Before we set sail on our continued coverage of 1899, make sure you're following us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Hive, TikTok, all those great things at A Bite Of Pod. Also, if you like the show, want to support the show, support, you know, like indie LGBTQ podcasters.
Yeah.
Do that on Patreon. Get bonus content, discounts on merch, free stuff. Go ahead and do that. All of that's down below in the description. Lastly, but not
leastly,
leave a review, subscribe, give some stars, do all that stuff. They like that. The algorithm and those things, that's how they find us. And, you know, it's a game.
Who is the algorithm and what do they want from us?
I don't know. Apparently, they're just like Daniel in this series. They're mysterious, but want things.
They have the Beatles.
We have to appease the Beatles.
They are our god. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's take a quick look back, shall we?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So 1899, episode one, The Ship, and episode two, The Boy. Passengers from all over the world are traveling on the Keberos to America.
Keberos.
4 months earlier, another ship called the Prometheus mysteriously disappeared. While on their journey, the Keberos receives coordinates and they reroute themselves to find the other missing ship floating in the middle of the sea.
Ooh.
They travel to the ship to find only one passenger is still alive, a boy locked in a cupboard, it's not Harry Potter, holding what looks to be a stone pyramid. As they bring him back, another passenger climbs aboard with a pocket full of magical beetles.
Ooh.
Captain Ike decides to reroute the ship back to Europe, and the crew questions his sanity. A young Danish girl, Ada, meets Daniel, the beetle guy, on deck, and he apologizes to her. Later, her lifeless body is discovered.
Whoa, that was the first two episodes of 1899. Damn it, I keep wanting to say 19.
Gonna party like it's 1999. I think we have Prince to blame for that.
It's his fault. All right, spoiler alert. We are going to be covering the next two episodes of 1899. I swear to God, I know dates. I swear.
I always believe in you, but at the end of us covering something, you'll get it right.
Yeah. So right. This ship is about to sail into spoiled filled waters.
Beautiful there. Choppy. Let us officially take a bite of 1899, episode 3, The Fog, and episode 4, The Fight.
To the F's.
Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa.
So these two episodes, so there's a pattern going on with these episodes. It opens with a dream-like sequence from a particular character. First one, we got Mara, and the second one, we got Ike.
Mm-hmm.
The third one, it opens with Ling.
Yes.
We see a little bit of her. So it's continuing that theory that we've had with this show that whatever situation they're in, be that it's like a Matrix or whatever type thing, they all are somehow dealing with something they've done.
Yes.
Even if it's real or not, I don't know. But that's what it seems. And we see this with Ling. We questioned why she was lying about not being Cantonese. And then also, what's the deal with Miss Wilson? But in this opening, it was a little interesting. It was very short.
Mm-hmm.
She's in water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a box that gets thrown in the water that she's in. And then she wakes up.
Yes.
Right.
Now, we decided to watch these two most recent episodes with subtitles on.
Yes.
And so when you hear a disembodied voice, it tries to tell you who it is. And so it actually says that, you know, as we have those scenes and those flashes to when they wake up in what we're thinking is the quote unquote present moment of their life, someone says, wake up. And it says it's Mora.
Right.
Telling them to wake up.
Yeah, because that was the first one we heard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're just using the same wake up thing, but why would they?
Right.
So there has to be a reason.
That's the thing. I feel like in this show, things are placed in a way for a specific reason. And so for some reason, Mora is telling them all to wake up from these past trances that they're in.
That they're being shown for whatever reason at particular times.
Yeah.
It seems very calculated, and I don't like it. I don't like they're a wizard behind a curtain somewhere. I want to know who and why
this is. You know, and that's a really good kind of metaphor you just used. Like, who is who is the wizard? You know, is Mora actually the wizard? Is she the doctor? In reality.
Yeah, after these two episodes, I don't trust her. She's on my radar. I'm not trusting her one little tiny bit.
She's on your sonar.
Oh.
Bing.
I guess radar would have worked too.
Yeah, radar on boats and sonar. I don't know boats.
Isn't sonar just a type of radar?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know enough.
I feel like we are again in the waters of not knowing how boats work. What other, was it Shadow and Bone where we were like, we don't know how boats work.
Oh my gosh. And those were like sand skiffs or something too. Those weren't even in water.
Apparently to do a podcast, you need to know boat terms. And we still have not learned.
You know, the thing is that I fear that we do not think enough about the boat before recording the episode. So then we're left drowning when we get to it.
Ooh, look at all those.
Holy smokes.
So the opening of this episode, again, has Ling and her past, present, whatever it is. But we also, to set up kind of these episodes and the powder keg that's going to make these two episodes explode almost. So the Prometheus is in tow with the Kerberos.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still there, but they're going into some type of fog. It looks very heavy. I love a fog scene on a boat. I don't know why. It's just cool. It's just very mysterious. We had him in Our Flag Means Death, Shadow and Bone, Pirates of the Caribbean. I just love him. I don't know why.
They definitely add to the atmosphere of it, and I feel like it heightens the danger. One, you can't see what's necessarily coming at the ship, and two, if you're on the deck, don't go too far. Because if you can't see that far in front of you, you never know when you'll get to the railing and possibly over.
Bye-bye. Well, yeah. That's your fault. Don't go on the deck. Anyway.
I mean, people running around. Ling included. Lingy included.
But we get some type of conclusion or what happened after they found Ada's body. The doctor, I put that in quotes, the very, like, doesn't give a shit doctor, the male doctor, does some type of autopsy or just general looking over.
Yeah, it looked like he poked her a couple of times.
Yeah, but he couldn't see any visible signs of death. I thought they were going to do an autopsy on her. I'm glad they didn't. That's fine.
That would have been brutal.
But he chalks it up to being a stroke or a heart attack. She's 12. I mean, even Mara says she was fine. She did not exhibit any signs that she could possibly be having this. I know that sometimes you can't really tell, but again, she's 12. I don't think that she dropped from a heart attack.
Right. And we learned in the first episode that this guy is kind of a quack anyway. I mean, his whole thing is that his father was a doctor, so then he became a doctor, but he doesn't actually have any of the credentials that you would need or the intelligence.
Jesus. Say it a little faster.
I don't think I could if I wanted to. I can't even remember what I just said.
Whoa.
I felt like Six from Blossom for a second. And then, of course, he has the rebuttal of, you know, oh, this is why women shouldn't be doctors. They have emotional attachment and blee, blah, blue, blee.
He also calls the little girl a bad seed because of Darwin's natural selection. I just hate him. Why isn't he the one dying and not?
Yeah, this guy, send him up on the deck during the fog.
Oh, my God.
See what happens to him.
Ike decides to not tell anybody. He's like, let's not tell anyone, which... Dude, like, you have a whole below deck community.
Well, this
people.
Is someone's child.
Right.
Yeah.
Go tell them.
Yeah.
If he would have, maybe.
Maybe.
Some of this mutinous behavior might not have happened.
I agree.
This is the one thing in ensemble casts that always bug me is, like, I know they do it because the reason why they don't is because it's going to lead to another thing, but it is so frustrating. Just tell the information. Just loop everybody in. It'd be fine.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. That's like really any creative work. When someone gets the letter or sees the thing happen, so what do? They keep it to themselves?
Yeah, yeah. And to add to more, Ike decides that he wants to find the log that they keep on the ship of like what happened, where they were going, all that stuff. And so him and Mara decide, okay, let's go on the Prometheus and to go get that.
Yeah.
So that kind of sets up the motives and the things that are going to continue these stories. So for cohesive sake, let's talk about Ling in this one, because I feel like even though in the fourth episode, Jerome gets his own stuff, Ling kind of gets a little more screen time or at least a little more in depth.
Definitely. Yeah.
So it opens with a really uncomfortable scene of Miss Wilson telling her to undress so that way she can check her out to make sure she's clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. I mean, she's one of her girls, which is obviously she's going to use her for sex. It's very uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, it's incredibly uncomfortable. And, you know, trying not to squirm too much, if you're really paying attention to what's being said, we learn that Ling Yi is taking another girl's place, as Miss Wilson puts it.
Yeah.
So we're kind of, you know, the conversations between Ling Yi and who we learn is most definitely her mother.
Yeah, I mean, they say mother. I don't think they said it in the first two episodes.
No, they didn't.
Now they do. And seeing the kind of flashbacks and stuff we get, I'm led to believe at least some type of motherly figure.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
In some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But we know definitely now that she is taking someone's place. And, you know, Miss Wilson does know who they are and does know that she's really not Japanese. And so she's been in on it the entire time. Yeah, she speaks Cantonese to her in this episode.
Okay, I thought I saw that, but I wasn't too sure. But I think that there is some level of deception still between them because she finds out she's a virgin still.
Right.
She's like, you're supposed to be one of my best girls. I'm deceived.
Yeah. I'm fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know enough about this type of thing in the 1800s.
I just think it means more like she's supposed to be the best.
She's supposed to be experienced already.
Exactly. And gotcha. Now she's not experienced. So, yeah. But she gets even grosser when she's kind of like, I can spin this. This could be a good thing. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
When she takes her rings off as she like,
yeah,
Ling is on the bed, I was just like, oh, I don't like you. She's probably the number one person I hate. And she has hardly any screen time.
Well, I think that they crafted the scene exactly how they wanted. Like, you in that moment, the way that they shoot the scene, right, is that we're actually seeing Miss Wilson
from
through
her perspective.
Through Ying Li's legs, as if we're looking at her as if we are Ling Yi. Excuse me, I swapped the letters. So they achieve that, right? We're feeling how uncomfortable it is for this to be happening.
Yeah. Yeah, we find out in Ling's story leading up to her being on the Kerberos that it seems like her mother, there was another girl involved, Mei Mei,
mm-hmm.
and she was supposed to be the one on the Kerberos.
Right.
And her mother used to, it seems like she's in the same kind of work, and when men would come to their boat, she would put them to sleep, steal from them, whatever they would do. It's not exactly clear, but it seems like they would unknowingly put these people to sleep.
Mm.
So Ling does that to Mei Mei, but I guess she doesn't know how to do it, and she ends up killing Mei Mei. And her mother and Ling put her in a box and throw her into the water.
Yeah.
And that was the box that we saw in the beginning. So this is obviously this is what she's dealing with, the guilt. She murdered somebody by accident,
mm-hmm.
and then also took her kimono and took her place.
Right. Well, that's what's sort of interesting here is that Mei Mei, when we meet Mei Mei and we hear from her, the plan always was to try and trick people into thinking she was Japanese.
Right.
So that was always part of the deal of that, you know, whether it's with Miss Wilson or not, whoever this person was giving Mei Mei this opportunity to go to America, but they were going to sell her as a Japanese girl.
Right. So they're deceiving on some level.
Yes.
And they're trying to get to America for whatever reason.
Right. And so Ling Yi wanted to make her sleep so that she could take her place.
Right. Not kill her.
But not kill her.
Yeah.
So that's where her plan gets foibled there. And now she's living with the guilt.
Yeah. Whenever she kind of leaves her mother because she's dealing with this guilt and she runs into Oleg, and Oleg's really nice to her, gives her a coat and everything, and she sees more of these visions, she says something to Oleg that was pretty upsetting. And I think she's coming to terms with, or like, accepting the thing that she did, and she said the kimono doesn't belong to me,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty upsetting. And she's not only having to wear it to deceive people, but she's wearing it, like she's physically wearing her guilt.
Right.
Ugh, that must fuck somebody up.
Yeah, and there's also that aspect of the kimono itself. You know, I'm treating this show like a seek and find in Highlights magazine.
Oh my God.
I'm looking for the triangle hidden everywhere.
Yeah.
And when we see the back of her kimono, we see the triangle on it.
Yeah. I wonder if the triangle is just some big red herring that's like, it's just there to like symbolize the series. and not actually lead to anything.
Yeah, it could be.
It's in too many places to where it's like, how is nobody noticing these triangles?
Well, I was thinking that myself. Like, what does this mean? I mean, later on, we find out that it's the shipping company's symbol.
Right.
So, like, if we think into it, we're like, okay, so it's the shipping company's symbol, and it's on the back of her kimono, so I don't know. Is she owned? You know what I mean? Like, so, right. And maybe in that case, it doesn't mean much, or it's just, like, a marker of this person is also part of whatever's happening in this show.
Yeah, so Ling decides that she's going to go through with what Miss Wilson wants her to do, which is, while their people are disgruntled, what do they turn to? Sex. Mm-hmm. And so Miss Wilson essentially wants to use her to lift people's spirits.
And make some money.
Right. And Ling is like, okay, I'm going to do it. We're not supposed to dream. I took this from somebody. I need to go through with it. So her first client is Lucin. And it gets weird because as they're in the room together and she starts doing what she's supposed to do, Lucin's like, I don't want sex. That's not what I want. I just want to sit here for a little bit and also have a seizure. He wasn't able to take his medicine because Clements walked in on him. Then he goes to meet her and then he has a seizure. We find out that it's the medicine he takes is to subdue his seizures, but also no boner.
Right.
So that's why he can't have sex with her.
Yeah. I mean, I think we still haven't found out really more about why Lucien and Clements are together.
Yeah, that's a glaring mystery.
You know, why is he hiding this from her? You know, if someone's your spouse, you tell them these things.
I don't know. I mean, you should. I think if people actually like each other, they might have just been like an arranged, like he had to because he's of a certain age. But she's also acts a little weird. I don't know. It's very odd.
There's that barrier there that we don't know about. And so, I don't know. He's just going to find solace in another room and find something to occupy his time, even if it's just sitting there and talking to someone.
Yeah, but go into another empty room. Like, it was just interesting that he was like, I'm going to have a seizure in front of somebody that I don't know. It's just,
well,
odd.
I don't,
like,
think
I don't know why.
I don't think he knew he was going to have a seizure. He was going to take his medicine and then go. He had the appointment and it just so happened that happened. I think he literally was just going there to sit in a room with someone else's company and not have a sexual act occur. But unfortunately, because he didn't get to take his medicine, he had a seizure.
It's just weird. Like, why even do that? Like, what was the point of you going into that room to just sit with somebody else? It's odd. I mean, I guess he wanted companionship, but it's weird.
Like, or he can't trust Clement.
I'm just trying to find, like, the point and why they're bringing these two together, because it seems like there's characters in here where they know each other or there's some connection that they don't know, but they keep pushing them together. So I'm wondering why these two characters keep going together.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have known each other at some point. I'm not too convinced that these things that they're dealing with are necessarily real. I'm just, it's weird.
Well, I think that in these two episodes, we see some things revealed that reveal a common thread.
Like letters? Everybody has a letter.
Well, everyone has a letter. Or in these cases, right? So Ling is feeling the guilt of killing someone and then taking their place. We later find out that Lucien takes someone's place. We later find out that Ramiro also killed someone and took their place.
Ah, so what you're saying is all these people lied to get to where they're at.
Right. But by also killing someone and taking their place, taking on a new identity.
Interesting.
So that very concrete thing has now been revealed with three of our characters here.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much most of Ling's story in these two episodes. Like, we get to see kind of what brought her there, which is killing and taking somebody else's place, which seems to, now that we figured out, even though it was already there, that's what most of these people did.
Right.
So this episode blesses us with another trip to the Prometheus, which, you guessed it, still looks like shit and it's still empty.
And this time it's just the mighty duo of Ike and Mora.
Yes. They, as they're going there to the ship, Sebastian, in one of the earlier episodes, they got a telegram that was all in triangles.
Mm-hmm.
upright triangles and pointing down triangles.
Right.
As they leave, Sebastian opens this panel on the wall, and it has upright triangles and upside down triangles. And he puts in the code of the string of the sequence that he got from it. And then we don't know what it did. He just did it and then closed the panel. But, so,
and we do hear some mechanical things happening.
Some whirlings of something somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's, there has to be plants in these situations that are part of the company. I'm just going to call whoever the person is behind the curtain the company.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost feels like there's these particular people that are either reporting back to the company of what's happening
mm-hmm.
with the experiment that they're trying to do, but also kind of driving the narrative in the way they want.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sebastian kind of goes along with what Ike is doing
mm-hmm.
when he shouldn't be. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. So if this is like some sort of murder mystery party.
Clue?
Right. So you have someone like Sebastian setting the next phase into motion, right? Yeah. Then we have someone like Daniel, who is working behind the scenes to try and stop the next phases.
Little wet boy.
Yes.
Yeah, I have some theories about him.
Right? So that's, I think you bring up a good point of Sebastian sort of working for the company and trying to move things along in the direction that the company
Because how would he know that that panel is there?
Right.
Yeah.
Because I was even trying to think when Mora and Ike go down into the water in the lifeboat.
Right.
How do they get down there? It looks like Franz does some sort of like manual thing to lower them down.
Yeah, he kind of like pushes something or like releases a
lever.
Or
releases something, right?
Yeah.
So this control that Sebastian using isn't the thing that controls the lifeboats being brought up and down.
No.
It actually looks like a very modern elevator control.
Yeah.
So again, this is this thing of sort of something chronologically doesn't really shouldn't exist in this moment, but it does. And what does that mean?
Yeah. So when they get to the Prometheus, they go to look for the logbook. It's not where it's supposed to be. So they go down to where the, what is it called? The furnaces that they put coal into?
That sounds good. Engine, right? The engine room.
Oh, let's say. I guess that, it's the engine room. So they go to the engine room and they're like, well, a lot of people are missing here. So maybe they burned all the bodies. They go and look in there and Ike finds the log. And he also finds a passenger log. One of the only pages that was saved in the furnace.
Because they were originally looking for the captain's log, but it wasn't there.
It was. I mean, I don't know if that book was it, but it seemed like the only page that was viable was, of course, the passenger list.
Right. And they also go to the captain's cabin and see the exact same placement of the hatch that's also in his cabin as well.
It's seeming like, because so these boats are from the same company.
Right.
We find out that there's potentially a third boat because he says that the company bought these boats from the Germans. They were worked on for 3 months and then they go. And this panel that is going to come into play later, he tells Mara that it's supposed to measure the power and how the engines work and send it up to the captain. But he said it doesn't work on the Kerberos. We kind of know why, but he says it's on both of the ships.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like whatever work this company did on it for 3 months, added those chambers into the room, put that panel in, and maybe put triangles in all the decor.
Yeah. You know, and you know, that's a good point of saying that he does mention that there were three ships. Right. It was a German company. It was bought by a British man. And these three ships, 3 points in a triangle. Again, are we plotting out something on a map?
Bermuda Triangle.
These three ships have to end up in three very specific coordinates.
Maybe.
In order for something to happen. I don't know.
Cthulhu.
Oh, well, that would be a fun addition.
No. Absolutely not.
So back to the furnace.
Yeah, so he finds it and he hides it from Mara, which, again, I'm going to say, Ike, stop hiding things from people. Although he might have a good reason on hiding it.
Yes, in this particular case, I believe he does.
But, like, maybe, I don't know. So her name is on the passenger list for the Prometheus, which thickens this plot like some thick cream cheese. It's a lot.
Well, I love cream cheese.
Yeah.
And this plot is getting delicious. I do want to say, just talking about the sort of theory that we were working through before, is it possible that Mora, our Mora, is actually taking the place of someone else that she murdered?
I think that's it. Or, Yeah, I mean, she probably was supposed to be on the Prometheus to begin with, maybe, and she didn't make it because she was in that asylum. I feel like there either is a crazy answer to it or like a misunderstanding. My first thought was, yeah, she was supposed to be on it, but she didn't, and that's why she caught the next boat out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Or she took somebody's place, which is running with the theme of kind of what we're going with.
Yeah, and it... Oh, gosh, no, I don't want to get into it.
There's we don't find out.
Yeah. There's just so many different threads. Turns. Yeah, there's just so many different ways that this could go. You know, I'm coming back to an in-between life and death thing where they're actually not taking someone's place. They're actually the people that died. You know what I mean? And they're trying to they're reliving that to figure out what happened to them.
Do not make it a lost situation.
I know. I'm sorry.
If this is purgatory, I swear to God.
But doesn't it feel?
No.
Purgatorian?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of does. I just hope it's not because, again, it's kind of been there, done that. So...
Yeah, like
I feel like the creators of the show, it might be a little more, or it might be a little more sci-fi-y in nature.
Mm-mm-mm.
I feel like it could go a bunch of different ways. Maybe there's an apocalyptic world, and they're trying to figure out what thing set something into. I don't know.
Oh, that's fun.
We'll see. So, the biggest part that kind of all these actions so far led to something happening that was brewing since really episode 2, and that is the mutiny. And it all starts with Ada and decisions to not tell people that she had sadly passed. Franz, who I kind of was iffy on in the first two episodes, I kind of liked in this episode, but then by the fourth episode, I didn't like again.
Yeah, Franz is the type of character that Franz.
I'm going to say Franz.
Yeah, I'm going to say Franz. I try my best.
That's fine.
Franz is the type of character who leaps before he looks.
100%.
Right? And so he's always swinging at people and he's giving out guns and he just automatically is like, this is what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But he doesn't actually think things through.
Yeah. It was sweet that he knew it was wrong to not tell the Dutch. I'm just going to kind of collectively call them the Dutch because it seems like they all speak Deutsch.
They're Danish.
The Danish people, all my notes say the Dutch. It's fine.
And it's a little confusing for us English speakers because for us English, which I'm barely, apparently not. Give me a break. I only have so many words in my brain at once. Because the languages that they're speaking, they refer to German as Deutsch.
Deutsch, right.
But they're speaking Danish and the people who are speaking German are speaking Deutsch.
I'm just going to call
one's
them.
Dutch.
What? Okay.
Dutch is from the Netherlands.
This is, again, the American education system failing me. I should know these things.
Those years of Texas history really didn't treat you right, huh? They didn't do you good.
Yeah, have you guys heard the story that I've said quite a few times that I took an entire year in Texas of just Texas government? It's fun. I didn't learn about the world. I learned about Texas.
I think Texas to Texans is the world.
I'm not a Texan. I don't care that I did high school in there. No. It was so weird going and doing that. Anyway, back to what we're talking about. It was nice that he went to Tove Lo and was like, I'm going to show you your sister. I'm going to tell you what happened. Then it was heartbreaking. The almost procession that she had to do, she took her sister and brought her back down to the people, which was nice. I think Franz did the right thing. But then the question started happening of what happened? Why do you know about this? Why weren't we told about it? They also took all their furniture down there. They kind of like just lock them
they
down
there. They
locked
them in there,
which is
as well.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
I would be mad too.
I mean, let's just say the ship sinks. All of these people are locked down there. It's terrible.
Yeah.
They don't care. They're treating them poorly. You know, and I think for Tove, the Ada represented a lot to her.
Right.
I think Ada was like wise beyond her years.
She was also hope.
Exactly. She was, you know, Tove looks at her mother who represents this religious zealot. And Ada is like this very forward thinking, like women can be doctors, little child.
Right.
And that is taken away from her. So that was also someone in her alliance of breaking away from the very religious ways of their mother once they got to America.
Yeah. And this sets the way for these people that are very set in their ways to to be influenced in a certain way that kind of Franz and the crew members that don't like what the captain is doing.
They're taking advantage of it.
Exactly. And he's kind of, I'm not saying he meant to manipulate them in their grief, but it was kind of easy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He finds, towards the end of the third episode, he finds, what, six more bodies in addition to Ada. And these people are kind of just dying and dropping like flies. In the beginning of the fourth episode, we see that there's way more than six people. So people just keep dying. I don't know, is this what happened on the Prometheus? But where are all the bodies? Why are these people dying? It's almost just like the extras, aside from Ada, right, just keep dying.
The people who don't have lines in any way. Yeah.
Ada was the one to make us emotionally attached to all these dead people.
Correct.
And then now they're just killing the extras.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think there's another theory of, like, this is just a cycle that keeps happening. And and Daniel's trying to get Mora or someone to realize that they need to break the cycle. Because we then later see them just throwing these bodies overboard. And that's why there were no bodies on the Prometheus.
Potentially.
Because they were just throwing them overboard.
And Mara was on that one, apparently.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's actually the same passenger list.
Well, that's, I think my headlining theory is that they're experimenting to get some type of outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And you have some variables and you have people that are trying to drive it in two different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the people that are the actual experiment. Mara, the captain, all these people. And they're trying to see where they go with it. That's my headlining theory because of that exact thing that you said. It's almost like they're trying. It seems very similar to the Prometheus. Is it going to happen again?
Yeah. I guess in episode 8, we'll find out.
Oh my God. Yeah. So Oleg was also down there when the mutiny was starting, when Franz kind of started giving guns to people and were like, we're going to take this ship back. We're going to go back to America. He's out of his mind. Oleg tries to leave. He gets caught. He was going to go warn the captain because they're, you know, Prometheus bros. They went to the Prometheus together.
Even though his last interaction with the captain was not great. Remember, he tried to say something to him. He's like, we shouldn't go back. And he just ignored him.
Exactly.
But he still tries.
He does try. He does try. There's a couple people that are on the captain's side and then on the mutiny side. One of those additions is Ramiro.
Mm-hmm.
So the scene of precedence that takes place with Angel and Ramiro is we get a scene between two lovers and a gate in between them. Crestor and Angel, they touch each other in between these this gate.
Yes, it's a very bizarre scene. I think
it kind of symbolizes the different classes.
Yeah, it's the classes. There's conversation about people having to wear masks,
right,
to hide who they truly are.
But Crestor can't, because obviously the reason why his face is that way is because he's a homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have to hide necessarily.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
It's a bizarre scene. But this sort of sets another scene into motion between Angel and Ramiro.
Yeah, apparently Angel, in his spare time, he likes to sketch Crestor's face.
Right.
They don't have cell phones, so I guess that's their form of Instagram. He can
snap a selfie.
Yeah. And Ramiro finds this stuff. It does seem that Ramiro did a lot and to be with Angel and do this journey with him. And Angel's kind of just flippant about it. Like, it almost seems like there was no conversation of, like, we're in a monogamous exclusive relationship.
Right, right, right.
One party thought they were, one party didn't. Again, speak to each other, people. Yeah. It helps.
Communication is key.
Yeah, I mean, just talk to each other. Ramiro apparently killed the guy of the clothes he's wearing.
Yeah, and Angel apparently has some sort of insatiable sexual appetite that keeps getting them into trouble.
He's a horny guy.
He's a hoe for show.
He's a hoe for show.
Yeah. Hoe for ship.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, just talk to each other. Ramiro decides that he's going to go warn the captain of the mutiny. By the time he gets to the captain, the mutiny is already happening, and they catch both of them.
It's too late.
Yeah. The end of this episode, and the reason why we're talking about it this way is because this is so fucking weird, and we don't get any explanation in this episode about it. We see Daniel take out what I could only assume is some high-tech poppet thing with some triangles on it.
Or it reminds me of one of those, like, really, like, cheap puzzle games that you would get when were little. You know those puzzle games and you had to like slide the tiles to try and create the picture?
Yeah.
It's that, but with round things, and there's no picture from what we can see.
There's no picture. Apparently he knows what he's trying to do, but we have no idea.
Some sort of 1899 technological wizard.
So he does these motions. The panel that Ike drew our attention to that supposedly doesn't work turned on, started whirling. And we see a bird's eye view of our two ships tugging along in this fog, and the Keveros vanishes, leaving the Prometheus behind, and it teleports away. And this is all while the mutiny's starting, and nobody notices. Nobody feels nothing.
Heating up.
Oh, man, so weird. So, and we have no explanation on why, but it turns out they go exactly in the position that they were before they diverged from the course.
3 days earlier. They're heading west again.
Yeah, so they're back on track, which brings me, why is this mutiny happening still? They're back on track. They're going in the direction they want to go.
Yeah, you know, I think there's like, I don't know what mutiny entails, right? But once you get the captain locked up.
Do what you want.
You are back on the course you wanted to be in, and you're no longer have the other boat behind you. I think you're good.
Yeah, you didn't have to do anything. You should have just asked Daniel and his magical poppet.
Yeah,
to just
and
fix it.
Right, exactly. with any his magic cell phone or his, you know, iPhone 0.5 or whatever it was, he could do whatever it is. But at this point, it's too late. Franz has riled up the Danish folk. The mother is hell bent on killing the boy.
Oh my god, because that homophobic woman.
Yeah, she believes he's the devil incarnate. So everything is just amok.
Yeah. So the ending or the conclusion getting there to this mutiny and everything, there is a opening scene in the fourth one where we get Jerome's wake up scene, mm-hmm. I'll call it. And guess who's there? Lucien. It turns out they're in some type of desert war. And I don't know where, because I don't think France has a desert.
France doesn't have a desert.
Right.
I did some quick Googling. I should have done more Googling. And there was a point in time where France was occupying Egypt.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So I think that's where they are.
Oh, okay. So it turns out there's only two of them, and they have a dead body with a higher ranking official from France.
Yes.
And from what we can gather, they've heard nothing from anybody. Supply, cargo, people have not come. They're supposed to be coming. It seems like they're worse for wear. Like,
they're desperate.
They're abandoned, almost. Mm. And Lucien decides that he's going to put on a higher-ranking officer's stuff and go back to France. That way, when he goes back, he's a higher official as opposed to just being an infantryman or something, mm-hmm, just very low. But Jerome doesn't really want to do that. This is a good guy, it seems like. He's kind of always making these decisions in the right way. I have yet to disagree with him so far. So he knocks him out.
From two episodes ago, we saw Jerome run into his room, hide the medal. We now know that medal belonged to the man whose life Lucien took over.
Yeah.
Or rank, I guess.
This was the medal that Lucien left Jerome with when he locked him up in the cage. As like a, here, take this. When you go back, you'll be free. But he left him in the cage in the desert.
He said something. He told him, I'm going to tell them you were a deserter. And that's why I locked you up. And he said, you can use this medal to barter in prison. But since he still has the medal, he obviously didn't use it in that way. And things didn't go according to Lucien's plan.
No.
So I'm guessing at some point, Jerome got out and tracked him down.
And he went into some coal, and now he's on the Keveros.
Surprise, I'm here. You're returning nightmare.
Yes, Franz has Jerome and Oleg start throwing the dead bodies overboard, which, gross. Icky. Meanwhile, the rest of the boat is in full mutiny, and the Danish people decide that, all these people were dying and killed our Ada because the boy was brought on the boat. So now this whole episode turns into search for the boy and kill him, even though he has not said a word.
And also steal things from people's rooms for no real reason.
It's not good. Sebastian brings up a really good point. He's the first mate, and he tells Franz, you gave guns to how many different types of people from different backgrounds? And what's your end game here?
Yeah. They're not going to just use them for mutiny against the captain. I mean,
Like
he lit the powder keg, basically.
They're already there. They're already back on course. Like the whole one of the reasons was to get it back on course, and you have not told anybody.
Again, that Franz, he just jumps into things too quickly.
It's not good. So as the Danish people are looking for the boy, they go into Anhel's room, and Krester is also there. Turns out there's some confrontation between, oh, Mama Danish, forgot her name.
Her name is Iben.
Mama Danish.
There you go.
Is, sees that there's some type of connection between the two.
Because Anhel calls him by name.
Right. How do you know this boy's name? Oh, now I got it.
Because, we're friends.
Right. Yeah.
Shuffleboard on yeah. the top deck.
And this makes Krester, you could tell that he's really dealing with being accepted by his family, his faith and everything, but also dealing with who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, he decides to side, for now, with his mom, which is not good, and spits in Anhel's face.
Yeah.
Which is, so Anhel has lost both of the people so far.
Well, maybe if he wasn't such a schizoid, it wouldn't have happened.
Again, communication is key, people. Tell him you want to open a relationship and be nice to Krester.
Speaking of communication, I still don't know who speaks what languages because everybody sometimes understands each other.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. But remember we said when shit hits the fan, people can't understand each other. Nobody understood Anhel in the situation, which was kind of sad.
Mm.
He was like, what's going on? Like, hi, what are you doing? Don't yeah. take that.
And I guess he... There was no way for Krester to tell Anhel that his mother or, you know, was against him in some way. But still, it's just a mess.
Right. So most of this episode is just people running around, ransacking rooms, being really not nice to other people. But they kind of deserve it, kind of don't deserve it. That's neither here nor there. But the point of this episode is to kind of come to some type of climax where they finally do find the boy.
Mm-hmm.
And there. In their religious ways, how do you exorcise a demon? You throw it overboard. This boy that literally, again, has said nothing and went willingly with these people. He gets thrown overboard. And of course, Mara's like, my baby. No.
I mean, I do kind of agree that the trouble really didn't begin until he came on board. But I don't know.
He's the catalyst.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't blame the boy. Blame
the devil.
The devil. And the triangle. I still don't know. I mean, these chambers in these rooms, the triangle, again, we're not getting any answers because the boy and Daniel are not saying anything. I mean, these Beetleborgs have been doing a lot. They can open any door, but that's it.
And lead you to a very specific place yeah. for some reason.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we kind of get this group formed. It has Ike, Clements, Jerome, Oleg, Mara. Am I missing somebody?
And the boy.
And the boy. So it kind of seems like those are the characters so far that are going to be leading this story in a certain way, at least until they get some of the other characters on their side, I guess. We still have the glaring mystery, and we don't get the answer in these episodes on why is Mara's name, Mara, why is her name on the passenger list? It's weird.
It's very weird.
We don't know. They retreat. There's a big fight that happens between both sides. They retreat after the boy gets thrown over. And as Ike asks Mara about it, like, why is your name on this? Why you tell the truth?
As she's about to answer.
Yeah, just as she's about to answer. Knock, knock. Same cupboard, different boat. The boy comes out of the place they found him with the black triangle and immediately hugs Mara. I don't... Like, what? Is it like the what is it, that cupboard from Harry Potter? What is it? The switching cupboard? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Is it like that?
So, theories. Yeah. So, here are some theories.
Uh-huh.
Daniel, earlier in the episode, makes his way down to the engine room and goes to that mysterious steam box. He opens it and takes some sort of, I don't know, 1899 USB cord and plugs it into his little tablet. He moves it around, the thing lights up. So if this is some sort of game in some way, is Daniel trying to regenerate the boy because he knows what's going to happen? So he has to reload him up into the cupboard.
He also right? like switches it like a sidekick. Like
he's, oh, that's true. It does. Like, it clacks open.
So it's bigger than what it seems like. I don't know 1800s cell phone technology.
Apparently.
This is weird.
Yeah, it was more progressive than we thought. So that's theory one in our game theory. Now, another theory I have is we see a conversation between Mora and Ike in one of these two episodes where she tells him that she had a miscarriage.
She lost everything.
There were complications and she can't have children anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What if the boy is somehow the baby she lost? Oh. And that's why he runs out and hugs her.
That's icky. I mean, it could be.
Right? A loss. Icky. And then through whatever this is, psychological experiment, whatever, they are giving her this chance to be with the boy and figure things out.
Him? He doesn't even speak.
I know. And then...
Say something.
And then we also were kind of talking a little bit of like, is Daniel the boy, but later in life?
So they have the same look.
Right? They have the same dark circles under the eyes, so they both control beetles. And they have a moment at the bar before the boy regenerates in the cupboard that he's trying to tell her something and they can't because then the captain comes over. There's a lot of like missed opportunities for conversations.
Well, they here. For some reason, both boat boys are drawn to Mara for some reason. Again, she's the main protagonist, so it's one of those things of she's the key, but she doesn't know or something. But it's just hard to pinpoint what that exactly is and how much of a part she actually is playing in anything.
Yeah. And we also had a moment where Daniel goes into the room and talks to the boy in the third episode, and he asks him, did you find it yet?
Another beetle? Another triangle?
What are they looking for, the two of them? How are they connected?
Yeah, after that that short little conversation, he goes into the chamber that's under the bed that Mara also has in her room. So I don't know, maybe you need to bring the black triangle down there for it to activate somehow?
It's something like that, right? They're trying to find the spot to put the triangle.
Ridiculous. But let's not glare over the fact that... So this boy is back. Mm-hmm. After Mama Dutch threw him overboard. Danish, not Dutch.
You got it.
Whatever. Mama D threw him overboard and he's back. And it's going to fuel the religious rage that she already has.
And
how do you explain it?
And he came from basically the same cupboard that he was locked in on the other ship.
And it just so happens that the people that saw it were all the same people that were on the Prometheus. So there's nobody, aside from Clements, really, and Ramiro, there's nobody that can corroborate, there we go, that's the word, their story.
Right. And
mysterious within mysterious.
And so if we're thinking our cyclical theory here,
ooh, big
right,
bird.
The only way to stop him from coming back is to just lock him in the cupboard. So whatever happened on the Prometheus, whatever group of people that were, they tried to kill him or throw him overboard, and the only way they could think to stop him was to just lock the cupboard shut.
But was that the right move? Because there was nobody on the Prometheus, so maybe they should try to figure out something instead of just being like, throw the devil boy overboard and lock him in there. I mean, if this dude can regenerate, like, how is just cupboard doors gonna stop him? But whatever, everybody has a weird weakness.
Crowbars.
Yeah, so I just... We're getting answers on why some of these characters are in the positions they are, which is great. And it's building mystery and story and giving us a little more in depth with these characters. But now it's doing that like kind of just signature mystery sci-fi thing where it's just giving us tiny little breadcrumbs that could lead anywhere. And they're still on the boat. I don't know what's going on.
We're halfway through, and I think as they want us to, we have more questions than answers.
Oh my God.
I actually don't think we have any answers at this point.
No, none, except for we know why the boy is in the cupboard when they found him. Because he died or something. That's an answer.
Yeah, I'll take it. For now, yes.
All right, well, make sure to join us next week as we continue our voyage into 1899. Episodes 5 and 6. And then we got our last one after that.
I think we have more questions and mysteries ahead.
Oh my God. I wonder if it's going to be one of those things where it does not give us any answers
in this whole thing.
Until like the last 5 minutes of the last episode.
Or it just like makes it even weirder. And it's like, great.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They're all cave people or something somewhere.
With oh, magical phones.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Till next week, guys. Oof,
bye. Thanks for listening to A Bite Of. Artwork and editing by our own Noah. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at A Bite Of Pod. And on Facebook at A Bite Of. If you have any questions, recommendations, or just want to say hi, you can contact us on abiteofpod.com. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review to spread the word. See you next time on A Bite Of. Bye.